Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up. Kingdom Marketing, Brussels on the air. Come on, y'all. Documentary podcast.
No more back-thinking, thinking ahead. The world's changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much danger, more in poverty.
Wake up. This is Russell Price. I'm the publisher of Be There Magazine. This is Documentary Podcast, pulling your eyelids open, giving it to you straight talk, no chaser, information that's hard to swallow, but good to know. Before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors, CarShield, cars go further. If your car is not under warranty, call CarShield. Soul Food is still a big staple in DMV. Also, Torby's Restaurant, 700 V Street, has got soul food all day breakfast. Stop by Torby's Restaurant, 700 V Street, Northwest. Tell them Russell sent you, the king of all marketing. On our newsmaker line, we have a special guest. I mean, the bell, man, is powerful. Kenny Barnes, welcome. Kenny, give us a little bit of a around who you are.
Russell, first of all, good morning, my friend. How are you this morning?
You know,
this involves a lot of things. I think a lot of people know me from my son was murdered, and I've been involved in gun violence, reducing gun violence. My son was murdered in 2001 in a clothing store on 11th and U Street Northwest. So I thought, you know it, Russell. And he's very well known, and I got involved with dealing with gun violence. But a lot of people don't know, but you do, because Russell knows everything. But I used to be involved in concerts, and I promoted concerts. But what most people don't know is that Kenny Barnes and Mel Edwards, were the ones who began the original concept of go-go music back in 1971. We started a weekly thing on Friday night called the Friday Night Go-Go at the Squad Room out in Palmer Park, Maryland. And that's where they had to go-go today.
That is amazing. So there was no such thing as go-go, or did you create go-go, or you just promoted go-go?
If you remember back then, Russell, what I was doing were called cabarets. You know, the cabarets at the Burgundy Worm and Knights of Columbus. And so Mel and I got together and said, let's do something different. Let's do something unique. And so we got the inspiration from the Smokey Robinson song, Going to a Go-Go. And then we said, what band should we are? And we had thought about the Young Senators back then, but we said, no, we're going to have Soul Searchers. They had that rhythm and blues, sound, and they could cover music better than anybody out there. And then Chuck Brown, they had original music that they had, but didn't have a name to it, of course. And so we hired them at the Friday Night Go-Go. That music became Go-Go music, and the rest is history.
Ooh. I tell you, Go-Go blew up, man. I mean, it got to be big. In D.C., D.C. is the official music for D.C. is go-go.
Now, you said something.
You said you used to do the go-go dances on Friday night, and it was at $3. You say $3, and you stayed on.
Russell, you remember that. It was $3. Mm-hmm. It was $3 before 11, $3 before 12, and $5 after 12. And we went from 12 to 6 in the morning. So we'd had soul searches, and then we would have another band performing as well.
And people stayed up all night long. They go-go'd all night long.
Well, what happened was we got the original people came in, and then the clubs were closed. Everything was closed around 2 o'clock, and then those people would come in. So we'd be rocking it till 6, 7 o'clock in the morning.
Wow. Could you imagine doing something like that today? Could you imagine having a go-go that could last to 6 in the morning today?
I'm telling you. But you, it was something brand new back then, though. And we would be jam-packed. Like every Friday, we would be jam-packed. There'd be lines around the door trying to get in.
Hmm.
Most people don't know that now. Yeah. I just thought I'd like to mention that to you this morning because I'm getting ready to do a few things which I think people need to know that Kenny Barnes, besides being involved with gun violence, right, which a lot of people know me about, is that Kenny Barnes also, along with Mel Edwards, Russell, you should remember Mel Edwards. You used to be on WL Radio.
Right.
You remember him? He and I were very good friends. And so we were promoters. Matter of fact, something else you don't know, Russell. We were the first black promoters to put a concert in the Kennedy Center. Back in 1972, we did the musical world of Quincy Jones with the Brothers Johnson. That
you
was
put
the
a
first
concert,
black concert
inside the Kennedy Center?
No. Yes, in 1972.
Wow.
The musical world of Quincy Jones with the Brothers Johnson. It was the first black concert ever promoted at the Kennedy Center.
How come today, Kenny, there's not a lot of black concerts at the Kennedy Center today? How come that's not a place where people go, black people go to put concerts on today? In 2023, how come there's not a lot of black concerts at Kennedy Center today?
Well, you know, I've been out of that business for 40 years. I cannot really give an answer, probably because it's so expensive. The Kennedy Center is very expensive. That may be why. So, and then they may have changed their policy, because back then, you know, it was Mel Edwards and I, but it was also, I don't know if you remember Russell, DJ Productions. And mainly it was myself and the WL disc jockey. Bobby Bennett, you remember Bobby Bennett? And Carl Henson and Raymond St. James. Raymond St. James and Chuck McCool and Carl Henson and Gregory Hines. So we were called DJ Productions back then. And that's who actually put the concert on. Yeah.
Well, you know, so brings back
memories.
You know, Smitty just died. Oh. The Mighty Blazer.
The Mighty Blazer died.
Just died, man. Smitty
no, I did
died.
Not know. Wow, oh, no, I did not know that. The Mighty Blazer.
Smitty just
wow,
died,
man. Wow, no idea. I had no idea. Wow, he's a legend. Smitty the Mighty
legend,
Blazer.
Yeah.
And he was a dancing fool, too. He could dance,
He could dance.
He
died, but it's all good.
Oh, he could dance. No question about it. And then he had the nightclub out there. In Maryland, he owned that nightclub.
And Bay Street. It's called Bay Street.
Bay Street.
He had the Mark 4, right. And he had the Mark 4 and Bay Street.
Well, he didn't own the Mark 4. But that was like Bernard Cohen.
Cohen.
Cohen and, I forget the Paul. Paul Cohen.
Paul Cohen. That's his name. Paul. You know your history, buddy. You know your history, bro.
Yeah. Paul Cohen and Larry. And Larry went on to get to the nightclub out on Down Road. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember those days.
Classic.
Yeah, Larry went on to buy the classics all the way out on Town Road. And Smitty worked at the Mark 4. Everybody knew him from the Mark 4. Yeah, man.
David Sims.
Remember David Sims? Yes. David Sims also on Bay Street.
Bay Street, right.
Blazer, Smitty, and him, man. Dave was on Channel 5 News, I think, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how did you get involved with the gun violence thing? After your son got killed on U Street, you started an organization. What's the name of your organization that you had for gun violence?
Root, like the root of a tree. It was an acronym for reaching out to others together. And when my son was murdered, which is the most tragic thing that could ever happen to anybody. I mean, to lose your child is not supposed to go before you. And that to lose your child under such tragic circumstances. And back then, you got to remember this is like 2001. And back then, Russell, black people getting killed, people weren't paying much attention to them. And I decided, no, that's got to stop. And so I started, you know, getting involved and being on the news all the time. And but you know the worst thing about it is that my son died in 2001. When my son died, death was by gun violence was the number one killer of African-American males in the United States of America. Well, guess what? 23 years later, it's still the same thing. Nothing has changed. And you should wonder, people should ask, why is that? Why can death by gun violence be the number one killer of black American males between age 15 and 35 for 35 years, and nothing has changed? You better believe if death by gun violence was the number one killer of white males, it wouldn't be going on. It's still the same today. There's a reason behind that. And look at what's going on in Washington. I looked on the news last night, I think. Six people shot yesterday. One killed, five wounded. But that's not anything unusual that's happening in most major cities today. Well, why is that? Why are we having the same problems that we've had for the last 25 years? And people need to start asking that question. Why? Well, I mean, I think I have some answers.
I think we have to ask why. We have to ask why. Why are we still killing each other? And why is black-on-black crime still considered not something to be worried about? People don't take initiative for black-on-black crime. They look at it as just normal activity. And your son's been dead since 2001. Did they ever find the person who shot your son or killed your son?
Oh, yes. We knew the next day he was dead. And the young man ended up turning himself in. He had killed, besides my son, in the course of a year, he had killed at least two other people. He was about 17 years old. And he was a product of the juvenile justice system. And he was an abscondee from the juvenile justice system. Yeah. So it's tragic and sad. But like I said, what people in this area and everywhere need to be asking, why? You look on TV every day, for example, and you see white people talking about mass murder. Look at it every day you see it on TV, and they should be talking about it. But they don't mention the fact, while you talk about mass murder, you know, once every 2 weeks or 3 weeks, which is terrible, terrible. You look at Washington, D.C., and you look at every major urban city in the United States of America, and you travel there, and you look at the news or read a newspaper, and you find out that people look like me and you being murdered every day. But that's not discussed on the national news. We're being murdered every day in every major city in America. And the reason why, I think one reason why, is we don't do enough to prevent it from happening. We wait till it happens, and then we react. Get more police, or do this, or do that. when the issue is, it starts early on. Children are not born violent, Russell. That's called learned behavior. You learn to become violent. And so we need to start taking measures when young people are in kindergarten and start going in and preventing them from turning violent before they get to that stage. We don't do a very good job of that. And we don't do a very good job of connecting families. In other words, we not only need to look at what's going on with the child at a young age, we need to look at the family dynamic and see what toxicity is taking place within that family as well. And so we need to have a comprehensive approach. I've been working on this for 25 years. Got some answers, Russell. But the problem is, trying to get these DC people to talk to me, it's kind of difficult. I don't know why.
Have you contacted Mayor Bowser?
I've tried.
They have several organizations that's talking about stopping the violence in D.C., but the violence is in D.C., but it's not like it was in the 70s when you had 500 people being murdered in D.C. It's down to like 200 people like in D.C. now a year. But you still got
right.
places like Don't Shoot the Brothers. You got the organization called Don't Shoot the Brothers, and you got other organizations that try to curtail the violence. But like you say, it's still going on today. It's not a...
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I know you're talking about Albany Farrakhan, good friend of mine. Albany Farrakhan, ceasefire, don't smoke the blunt. I know him, good
right.
man. A warrior.
Right.
I know him.
He got shot. I think
he
shot.
He was in a wheelchair for a number of years. Exactly.
Right. He's out.
Good
he's
man,
a
warrior. Oh, no, he's been walking for years.
He's been walking there.
But, yes, he's got a great organization. But what I'm saying, even with all the good work he's doing, right, the fact of the matter is that people are being shot in Washington. And if you are a parent, Russell, and you have a teenage child, a male, and you know, particularly males right now, if you got a young teenage male going out every day, you got to be worried. You got to be worried when he walks out the door. You know, that's what might happen. And the thing about it is, he doesn't have to be a bad person. He could just be in a crowd somewhere, standing and talking. Don't have nothing to do with anything. It's very dangerous right now in Washington, D.C. with young people. It's very, very dangerous.
What can we do to get our youth to be more proactive as far as education or getting a job or going into the military or going to college, or what is the problem with our young youth starting in high school, not being motivated to determine where they're going to go in their life?
Well, let me say this, Russell. By the time they get to high school, it's too late, right?
Mm-hmm.
Their minds have been made up. They're already determined or kind of determining somewhat their life path. And they start to be in a certain way of life right now by the time they get to high school. As I said earlier, we need to start with elementary school. We need to start with kindergarten. And we need to start working with children and families. You know, I don't know if you know this. I don't know if I ever told you that. But I'm a clinical psychologist, Russell. I don't know if I ever told you that or not. But I'm a clinical psychologist. And my degree is in clinical psychology. And we need to understand the dynamics of what's going on within a youth and the family, beginning at early childhood. And we know that research tells us that young children, by the time they start reaching middle school age, that's when they have the propensity to turn towards violence. So what we need to do, rather than wait for that to happen, and they already developing that propensity to turn towards violence by the time they reach middle school, let's go in early and prevent that change from occurring. That's one solution. The other solution is, of course, we need to get families and find out what's going on, because a lot of these children come from toxic families and, of course, toxic neighborhoods. And one thing that we know common sense, and we know in psychology, every individual is a product of two things, their genes and their environment. You and me, Walter, we're part 50% genes and 50% of our environment. So you got to deal with the genes and look at your family history. And, you know, a lot of stuff runs in the family. So, for example, mental illness runs in the family. If you have, let's say, bipolar disorder or schizophrenia or something like that, that runs within your family, right? And so, and a lot of times we're dealing with younger people that have mental health issues or family have mental dynamics running throughout the family. We need to be able to look into all of that and deal with these issues. And then, of course, there's substance abuse. You know, people say marijuana is not an addictive drug. But I kind of maybe a little disagree with that. I know people, I'm sure you know people, Russell, that in the morning, soon they wake up, the first thing they do is grab a blunt. And they smoke it all day and doing it every day. Well, that's not a habit for them. I don't know what it is. And then with what it is with the younger people now, they're using, you know, they're doing a lot of smoking, marijuana, smoking, you know. And then another thing we need to look at with our children is look at truancy. When you see a child being truant from school, then you know we got issues as well. So there are a number of issues that we can look at to look and determine the future, what may occur with this child. And we're not doing a very good job of that in this city.
You are absolutely correct. We have to look deep before we leap. We have to make sure it starts at elementary school because our youth are lost right now.
Yes.
You have been doing this for so many years, and what keeps you determined? What makes you go? What makes you not stop? Why are you so determined to do this?
When my son got murdered, it was the greatest pain any human being can experience. And I realized it wasn't just to me. You know, with every family, with their relatives and their friends, this hate, this pain is there. Like with me right now, 25 years later, it's still there. And unlike what most people think, there's never any closure. Your child been murdered, there's no closure. I don't care if you do get the person that did the act, there's no closure. And one of the things, I don't want to see people that look like me going through the pain that my and my family have suffered when they I think there are things that we could do about it. Number two, Russell, just like you, everybody, you and I are getting a little bit older. And what we need to do is we need to keep our brains active. We need to do positive things. There's a theory called Maslow's theory of hierarchy. I don't know if you've heard of it or not. But it says as we get older, we go through certain developmental stages. And it's like a pyramid. So the bottom of that pyramid is number one, that all human beings need safety and protection and food, clothing, and shelter. But by the time you go to the top, and you get to the top of the pyramid, it's seven stages in life. It's called self-actualization. So that when you reach as you're getting older, and you reach it going on that down the other side of the mountain, you start beginning to when you feel like self-actualizing. And you want to say, I don't want to leave this life without knowing that I've done some things that might have helped some other people in addition to helping myself. And that's called self-actualization as you get older. And so maybe it's a part of that too. But you got to keep your mind sharp. Like just like you're sharp. You're as sharp as you were when I met you 30 years ago. You're just as sharp now as when I met you then. Because that's because you're active. And you stay involved. And so I feel the same way. I feel that's what we got to do. And people like you and I, we want that to people that look like us. Then we got to give something back and try to help something out and help people out and be feeling better than what we had to go through. So I guess these are the reasons why.
Well, you're doing an excellent job of keeping things alive. Let's talk about you and your strength as a man and your determination to keep yourself going. When you had this challenge of losing your eyesight, how did you handle that? When you first realized you were losing your eyesight, how did you handle that?
Wasn't easy, Russell. When you used to being able to see all your life, and now all of a sudden you can't see. I think one of the things with me was that my eyesight, I lost it gradually. So I didn't lose it like overnight. And so it's a gradual loss. And then I developed a philosophy that with life is not like like blackjack, for example. You get a hand in blackjack or poker and you don't like it, you can fold that hand and get another hand. But with life, you got to play the hand you dealt. You can't fold. And so that's my mentality. That's my attitude. If this is the hand that I'm dealt with life, then I got to play it the best I can. And that's the way I deal with it. And then the way I deal with it also is that I have a philosophy. You know, no matter how negative a situation can be, no matter how negative it might be, every negative, there's a positive in every negative. You have to find it sometimes, but there's a positive in every negative. So those are my mantras as I go through life. I'm a member of the, as I was talking to you about it, I'm a proud member of the Washington, D.C. Rotary Club, and I'm very active in my Rotary Club. And as a matter of fact, I've started a chapter in my Rotary Club called the D.C. Peace Initiative. And we do a lot of work in trying to help prevent violence and working with the community and working with the police and community. We have psychologists in my committee, and we have people who are in the community, who have police. We have a little bit of everybody. And so with my Rotary Club, we're trying to lead a charge that I'm trying to help out with my community through my Rotary Club. And so it's things like that. I told you I want you to come down one Wednesday with me. Mm-hmm. I told you, see what it's like. Yeah. We meet every Wednesday. Rotary Club meets every Wednesday. So if anybody out there listening from my Rotary Club, you know I love all y'all.
Mm-hmm. Well, you seem to be so active. Like I say, I like what you said about the life that deals you the hand that you dealt. You have to deal with the hand that life deals. And when life deals you, you got to get yourself together and work that hand. But you can't fold.
That's right.
You cannot
fold. Keep on.
When you were actually realizing you were losing your sight, it was a gradual thing. So as time went on, it just more and more dim. You couldn't see anything.
Exactly. As time went on, it actually, I think it took about maybe 10 or 12 years for me to be in the situation I'm in right now. It actually took about maybe 12 years.
And the doctors couldn't
do anything? No. Trust me, if the doctors could do anything, I would have had it done. Because, you know, I don't know, I got a doctor for every part of my body. Right?
Right.
I mean, as you get older, one thing I believe in, that we weren't taught when we were younger, when we were kids, right? But what I believe in, you got to go see doctors. You got to get everything checked out. Because another thing, Russell, that probably everything that can go wrong with you today, almost, if you catch it in time, you can do something about it. Even cancer right now. If you get a cancer, like I had breast cancer, but I caught it very early on. So we were very preventive about it, and I had radiation treatment. And now it's been in remission for about 5 or 6 years now. But that's because I caught it early on. If I hadn't caught it, we had torn my chest.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true, man. You got to catch it in time. I tell you, the older we get, the things that break down in our bodies, so many people don't want to take time to go to the doctor and see things that happen and then come up with things that you have diabetes or you have heart conditions or you have, we say, eyesight, glaucoma or whatever. And then you don't take
high blood pressure, Russell. Very treatable. If people drive through, mm-hmm. I'll die from strokes. For example, that could have been treated by just taking some medication.
Well, I want to commend you. I want to ring the bell for you. Because I'm telling you, you seem to be so upbeat and so positive, and you can't see. I mean, that's got to be, it's to fantasize not able to see. And you wake up every day or you go to sleep every day. It's the same. I mean, I just don't understand how that works when you can't see anything. And you wake up and you still can't see.
Right.
But what do you remember things that you could see? What do you see in your head?
Oh,
you still see things?
Oh, yeah. Well, let me give you an example. For people that I've known, like, for example, Russell, I still remember how you looked, right, in my mind. For people that I've known, and people ask you, can you remember? Do you see colors? Yeah, in my mind, yes. I can see colors, people that I've known. Now, the problem is when you meet somebody new, and you meet somebody brand new, you don't have any idea what they look like, right?
Right.
But other than that, no, I can remember. Short-term memory. It's not that great, but that's not unusual, because once again, as a psychologist, we know that as you get older, the first thing to go is your short-term memory. That's the first thing to go. But you can remember things that happened years and years and years ago, but it's difficult to remember what I ate for dinner yesterday. Right. As you get older. But yeah, as I said, with my sight, and by being gradual, I got accustomed gradually to it going bad. Instead of just happening like just overnight. So as it gradually got worse, I got used to it getting worse and worse and worse. So I've gotten used. Now, fortunately, I do have people that work for me. And so I have people my home health care, that work for me from 7 in the morning to 12 at night. And they do a very good job. Matter of fact, one of the people working for my granddaughter works during the day. And I have another young lady works in the evening. And my daughter helps me out. My older daughter helps me out. And so I thankfully have the help that I need to get around. But I still do a lot of stuff on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to do it for them to want to. I want to be as self-sustaining as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want people doing everything for me, yeah. But I get a lot of stuff done, believe it or not.
So you
I get
you
a lot of
yourself?
Stuff done.
Do you,
no.
You cook for yourself? You have someone cook for you?
No. Yeah. Well, to be honest with you, even when I could see, I didn't cook that much for myself.
Okay.
So when it's something I was used to doing, yeah. But now I have people that cook for me. Yes. And then, like I said, just being active, I'm involved with some stuff I do at George Washington University. They have an institution called Building Community Resilience where they go into neighborhoods where they try to develop concepts and legislation on to help reduce the issues within our community. Because what's going on in our community, it's just not gun violence. Gun violence is really a symptom of what's taking place. What's going on in our community is a combination of things that's systemic and endemic, right? I mean, ever since slavery, we've got things we've been dealing with and we're still dealing with ever since slavery, and it's getting worse today. I mean, people today are trying to push things back like it was. You know how racist things are out here today, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then another thing is speaking back about our kids. When you have a child, and going back to prevention, when you have a child that grows up, and let's say this child grows up in some violent section of Washington. Okay, well, research shows that by the time a child reaches 5 years of age, their mind is fully developed. your mind, your personality is developed. So you got a child growing up in a bad neighborhood, and what's the first thing that all animals have to do? Self-preservation is the first law of nature. So you got to learn what I need to do to protect myself and take care of myself. You got a bad household, a bad neighborhood, and a bad community, and you wind yourself around surviving in that environment, right? And so now you have to learn how. Everybody's being violent around here. Well, then I've got to get violent. Everybody's smoking drugs and reefer around here. I've got to smoke drugs and reefer, right? I got to protect myself. I have to join my neighborhood crew. And you learn all these things, and you, as I said, it's learned behavior. And then we need jobs as we get older. It's just so much that as we can do. And then we need coordination. We don't need someone coming on TV saying the same things that we've been doing for 25 years and trying to do the same things again, calling for more police or whatever. Well, we did that 25 years ago. If getting more police was the answer, then we'd have been solved by gun violence in the community. If we were getting police was the answer, like police, getting more police is a part of the answer. It's a slice of that pie. But it's so much more slices that need to go into that pie. And I'm trying my darndest that while I'm still alive, that I'm going to fight this. And I'm going to fight this issue. Because everybody you know now, I'm sure including yourself, Russell, know somebody's been murdered. There's a family member, a friend that's been murdered. We need to work together as a community and as a society. And people like you and I and others, we need to be working together to try to stop this issue. And we need to demand certain things out of our mayor and out of our community and out of our leadership.
I agree. Tell me, Kenny, what three people in your life that was most inspirational for you? Who in your life inspired you the most? Give me three people that inspired you the most.
I can tell you two right away. My mother and my grandmother. That's easy. Two right off again, my mother and my grandmother are the people that inspired me most. And when they died, I didn't think I could live. You know, you're so attached to them, I didn't know how I was going to make it. And I would think that one of the best friends I ever had in my life was Mel Edwards. A great guy, and he's one of the best, closest people I've ever had in my life. I mean, I don't mean to hurt anybody's feelings because there are a number of people that have been instrumental, you know, with me. But off the top of my head, my mother and my grandmother were the very first two people I'm telling you right now. But pretty much, I've been the type of person that by not having a father when I grew up, as a man, you got to learn things on your own, kind of. And when you grew up, I grew up in Trinidad. I don't mean the island, Russell. I mean Trinidad Avenue. I grew up in Trinidad, which is a pretty rough section of town. And so you learn growing up there, if you don't have a father around, which is another problem a lot of times we may have with our children, that teaches you how to be a man. So, give you an example. When I grew up, right, the older guys that I grew up, that I kind of looked up to, well, if you could play basketball, or you could fight a little bit, you could dance a little bit, and you drank a little liquor, and you chased women, that was like the definition of a man. You know what I mean? Back when I grew up. But that's not a definition of a man at all. But I had to learn myself as I grew older what a real man was about. Real man is taking care of your family. Mm-hmm. Being true to your wife. Being true to your family. Taking care of your family. Taking care of the people around you. That's what a real man does.
Now, what you said is true. If you was a young boy in D.C. or Philadelphia, I'm from Philadelphia, and you had no father in your home, you looked up to the guy on the street, the guy who could play basketball, had a fancy car,
right.
Safe with,
that's right.
Did some drugs.
That's right.
Pimp.
That's right.
Dude, these people were like, oh, these are men. That's what I want to be. That's not a man. A man is a person who, say, takes care of his family, has a good job, loves the Lord, takes care of his responsibilities. But you're not taught that. You don't see that in your own family. So your idea of what a man's supposed to be is what you said. Somebody you see on the street, somebody who's dressed sharp, got the pimp suit on, got the pimp mobile, chasing women, drinking liquor, doing drugs. That's not a man.
Like rappers today. You know, Russell, when you look at kids to young people today, now look at what they have to look up to. If you understand these younger people, they have no respect for police. Mm-hmm. Right? Police come in and they want to harass them and intimidate them. And all. You know, we need police. Don't get me wrong. We have to have police. I'm not saying I'm anti-police at all. But if you look at the relationship between youth and police, they don't understand each other. They're antagonistic. So they don't trust police. If you look at the government, these young people don't care about no mayor, you know, the government and what the government's doing for them. And sad to say, Russell, even though you say you should love the Lord, I'm not going to debate you about that. But a lot of these ministers today are about prosperity ministry. They're not about saving souls. They're about making money. A lot of, I'm not saying all of them, but too many in my opinion. Because we need, like when I was coming up and you were coming up, the church was like a linchpin in the community. The church was a foundation within the community. It was not that these days. So a lot of these younger children have turned away. And then their mothers have turned away from the church as well. And so now, so you look around, so they don't respect ministers necessarily. They don't respect police. Who do they respect? They don't respect black business leaders. Why? Black business leaders, when they leave the community, very few of them come back. So now we don't have black business leaders. So who do we respect? Well, rabbi, hell, I can do that. I can talk. I can chase women. I can wear cool and jewelry. I love that. I can give me a nice car. I can be a thug. I can live a thug life. That's who they respect. That's who they look up to. Mm-hmm.
So true, so true. Tell me, Kenny, what's the one thing or the one myth that people misunderstand about you?
The one thing that people understand about me?
That I'm a flawed
individual that has made a lot of bad decisions. And I'm a flawed individual. But that I'm doing the best that I can with my life as it is now to prepare myself. And I'm doing the best I can do with my life now.
And how old are you now?
April the 3rd, Russell. Monday, April the 3rd, I'll be 78 years old. But you know something, Russell, my mind keeps telling me, well, no, you're not. You know, no. Because you still want a 45-year-old woman. You still want a 40-year-old woman. No, you're not 78. But, man, every time I put my foot on the ground, my body says, oh, dude, don't fool yourself. Yes, you are 78, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to get old.
What makes you, you said something so profound when it comes to your preference of women. Now, at 78 years old in August, I mean, April the 3rd, you're going to be 78, but you still say you want a 45-year-old woman. What makes a man 78 want a 45-year-old woman?
If you ask me, it's like brings back youth, I guess. It reminds you of being younger. And I know there's a lot of women out there gonna cuss me out. Right? But it's just a younger, youthful exuberance, I guess. I probably need therapy for that problem.
No, but that's amazing that say you prefer being with a 45-year-old woman.
Not necessarily 45. I just threw that out too. But you know, okay. In other words, I don't necessarily date women my age. Let me put it like that. I don't go out with people my 17 years old, 75 years old, 76.
I want to know from a man of your caliber, a man who's 78, what makes a man 78 would prefer not to go out with a woman who is 78? Why not?
I told you I probably need therapy. I probably need going to therapy.
I thought it to be true. Most men, I'm 74, and most men would prefer women who are not 74 or that were not 70. If you're 75 years old, that man doesn't want a woman 75. I see potential like... But women who are in
their 70s, let's be honest about
it. Well, like,
we don't talk about it.
They want somebody who is
younger. Right. We know, Russell, we don't talk about it. You know, a lot of times, but let's be for real. You know it and I know it too. You know, young, older men, it's like, let me put it like this. It's like a ratio. Think back when you were younger. When you were younger, and you were 15, 18, 20 years old, you want to deal with an older woman because that woman was experiencing and you were. But then as you turn 30, 35, you would date women your own age, 30, 35, 40. But then that ratio starts reverse. That the older you get, you start saying, I want to start dating younger women. Now, unless you're married, been married 40, 50, 60 years, if you're a single older guy, let's be real. The fact of the matter is, a single older guy in the day will more than likely have a preference to maybe women a little younger than him. And let's be honest about it. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest with me. I know that's true with me.
Uh-huh. That's amazing.
So
any
younger women out there listening, Kenny Barnes is single.
Kenny Barnes is single.
That's right. Any young woman out there, listen, Kenny Barnes is single. Oh, contact Russell Price.
Now you got it going on, Kenny. I tell you, this has been a serious interview. And I really appreciate your input. I like what you're doing, and I'm going to definitely support you. We're going to get the word out about your gun violence.
Yes.
Give us your closing statements.
My closing statement is that, you know, we're laughing in the last few minutes, but these are some serious matters that we've been discussing today. We need your help, Russell. We need everybody's help. If you want, contact me. I have people that I'm working with that we're working together. If you want to contact me, can I give my email address, Russell?
Email address, phone number, Facebook page, anything.
Okay. My email address is contactme@ K-E-N-N-Y, Kenny S-R, Kenny Senior, at root, like the root of a tree, R-O-O-T-I-N-C, at rooting.org. Kenny Senior at rooting.org. My phone number is 202-431-6646. 202-431-6646. I'm on Facebook. I have three Facebook pages under my name, Kenny Barton, and I have one Facebook page called Guns Aside. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on TikTok. And what's the other one? I'm on everyone in my tool. So if you want to reach me, it's not difficult. And I need for people to contact me and let us work together and try to save some of our children's lives.
This has been a pleasure and an honor. Kenny Barnes, contact him. Let's stop the violence. Let's stop the shooting in D.C. Wake up, everybody. What you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up. And the world is in their hands. When you keep the rest, it becomes the very best you can.
Okay.